Hello and welcome to another Marketing Meetup podcast. My name is James Sandbrook and I'm really grateful you're tuning in. Today is a bonus podcast taken from a presentation at our Manchester event. The talk is from Christina Lindquist, who is the CMO of Rafa. Rafa is a cycle clothing brand that has been in my monthly bank statement way more than it should have been over the last 10 years or so. As a middle-class, white, male-dominated sport, Christina talks about how Rafa are shaking things up and bringing some much-needed diversity to the industry. I found Christina's energy and optimism inspiring, but also appreciated the practical takeaway she gave for anyone wanting to drive diversity into an organisation. I think you're going to really enjoy this talk. But before we start, one quick reminder. If you're new here, we have a newsletter full of marketing tips, talks, insights, and links to our free webinars that we send out each week. You can sign up for that for free at themarketingmeetup.com. But for now, I shall pass you over to Christina.
5 years ago, I walked into a tiny interview room and the table was surrounded by 8 people. They were all white men. Mostly middle-aged, mostly middle-class, and I was probably 10 years younger than the majority of the people in that room. So quite an intimidating environment to walk into. And it was a second stage interview. They joked that they might need to hire more women if they wanted to make their brand and their business more diverse and inclusive. So I joked back at them and said, yeah, you might need to do that. And I bet the two other candidates in this process are both men. And it turned out that they were. I was offered the job, hopefully not just because I'm the woman, but because that I was the best person for the job. But I really deliberated over whether I wanted to take that role or not. I wasn't sure if that was the environment that I wanted to work within. I wasn't sure that they truly wanted to change, or I questioned that they really wanted to change. But I took the job for one reason only. So the CEO was incredibly inspiring. He was visionary. He was full of enthusiasm and positivity for wanting to drive that change. So not just within the organization, but he wanted to make his brand more inclusive and appeal to a more diverse audience. So I took the job. I went in. I was fired up. I was like, I'm going to change this company by myself. And unsurprisingly, when I got there, it was a bit like joining the Tory party. So it was, it was a bit of an old boys club. Lots of people had worked there for 10 to 20 years. Some people had worked nowhere else ever before, only in that company. So, but I was fired up, I was young, I was ready, I had energy, and I was like, I'm gonna change this business. And then fast forward 3.5 years later, this was me. That's not me, but I think it's a good representation of how I felt after those 3.5 years. So I left what many people had said to me, that is the best marketing job in the world. But I was exhausted because I had been pushing water uphill for 3.5 years and trying to change this organization. And I'm really proud of some of the work that we did there. We did make it more diverse. We did make it more inclusive. But it was a hard yard. And the breaking point was one more kind of show of alpha aggressive behavior was rewarded and I'd had enough. I was tapping out and I left that business. So it was pretty exhausting. That was my experience in the cycling industry. But does it have a bigger problem or was that unique to my experience? Well, there was a recent study done last year by the Bicycle Association, which is the industry body for the cycling industry in the UK. And they found that 71% of women working in the industry were considering leaving. And that is a shocking stat because there's only about, the makeup of the industry is about 20% female. So that's pretty shocking. If those 20%, 70% of those are thinking of leaving, doesn't leave many women working in the industry. And that, to me, that's especially shocking because it topped lots of other male-dominated industries. So automotive, you probably would think that that is traditionally quite a male-dominated industry. But only 40% of women were thinking of leaving the automotive industry. So not particularly compelling stats and clearly a bit of an issue in the industry. But then if we look at the professional scene, so this is the Tour de France. Not a very diverse picture, that, is it? And if you think about this, this race. So Tour de France, hardest cycle race in the world, 3 weeks long of riding, like epic endurance challenge. The men race for 3 weeks, the women race for one. They're perfectly capable of racing for three, but they're only allowed to race for one. And the women's race is only in its fourth year, whereas the men's is in like its 100th year. So yeah, not particularly equal. The men's winner, by the way, wins 10 times more money than the women's winner. So not a particularly equal industry. So you're probably thinking, what on earth can we learn from cycling about equality? Good question. I want you to think back to when you first rode a bike for the first time. Has everyone ridden a bike in here? Are you anyone keen cyclists? Yeah. Okay, a few. But this moment, so whether it's your mum or your dad or your granny or your granddad pushing you and you're coming off the stabilisers for the first time. I mean, stabilisers, I don't know if they exist anymore. Yeah. Everyone has balance bikes now. Have you seen those kids like scooting along on balance bikes? But that moment when the stabilisers come off for the first time, that takes belief and it takes bravery, but the payoff is this joy, like the smile on that kid's face. Riding a bike is a huge amount of fun. And when you have that moment for the first time, yes, you feel that feeling of joy and kind of bravery, but also this expanded horizon and expanded potential that you didn't know you could do that and you could push yourself this little bit further and you could experience more of the world on two wheels than you can on 2 feet. So it's joyful. I think riding a bike is one of the best things that you can do in your life. It's just amazing. I love riding bikes. But it's not easy. It's hard. Cycling is a hard sport and a hard activity at whatever level you're doing it, whether you're kind of commuting to work and it's a bit rainy or if you're doing an ultra endurance event across the desert like these two people here. I personally think, Max may disagree with me, but I think it's way harder than putting on your trainers and going out for a run, even if you are trying to run 100 kilometres or something. But it's a complex sport, so it doesn't just require that physical endurance. It requires mental endurance. It requires preparation, planning. It's hard. You have to go uphills and into headwinds, but you also need to be your own mechanic. You've got to be self-sufficient. You need to be able to change a puncture, or if you have something go wrong with your bike, you need to be able to fix it. So it's incredibly complex, and it takes planning, determination, effort to do it successfully. So maybe there is something that we can learn about cycling and draw parallels with that if you're trying to drive transformational change and culture change within an organisation. I want to take you back in time to when I was a kid. Not quite a kid here. I think I was probably about 25. Definitely less wrinkles than I have now. It's fine. I'll get over it. But yeah, as a kid, sport mad. Like every sport under the sun I was doing. So my parents at the weekend were driving me from swimming to athletics to gymnastics to basketball. I was doing everything. I just loved sport. And I remember asking my dad when I was about 13 years old, what's the best university for sport? And from that answer, I set my sights on Loughborough and was on my way there. And I vividly remember going around the open day on the campus and the woman that was showing us around said to me and my mum, yeah, it's not very gender balanced here. I think for every female student, there's 10 male students. You're like, whoa, okay, 10 to one, that's pretty imbalanced. And my mum just looked horrified that I was going to this, her young daughter's going to this university and there's not many other women around. But for me, that was the norm. So in those years at university and then the first few roles that I worked at within the marketing industry were always in sports companies. So I was very used to being like this picture, the only woman or one of a handful of women in very male-dominated spaces. And actually, I saw that as like a competition and a challenge. I thought, I can run or ride as far or faster than them. I can work as hard. Definitely, I can work as hard as they can and harder. And even at uni, I was like, I can down a pint faster than they can. I don't do that anymore. But I wore it as a badge of honour. I was like, I'm this woman who is succeeding in a man's world and, you know, I can do more than they can. On reflection, a pretty naive young woman's view, but I was fired up. It wasn't until I walked into that interview room that I talked about and subsequently into that business that I really understood like the scale and the magnitude of the problem and wanted to open people's eyes and really try and drive change within that business and within the wider industry, because there is a problem. So just thinking back to that company that I worked in for the 3.5 years and then comparing that to where I work today. So Max mentioned that the company that I work in is called Rafa. So it's a cycle clothing company. And from the outside, you would think that those two organizations would be quite similar in terms of their customer base, in terms of their makeup and like the makeup of the organization. But they are actually quite different in some respects. So I've been doing a lot of reflection about why that is. What is it that has made those two companies different and the journey that they've actually been on to drive change within their businesses? So the first company, yeah, was cycling. Already talked about how male-dominated that is. But it was also an engineering-led company. So STEM industries, science, technology, English and maths, traditionally been kind of more male-leaning and very few women working within those industries. It definitely is changing, but it's a slow change over time. And it was also a manufacturing business. So a lot of manual labour, operational factory floor. And so a lot of those roles were also held by men. So you had this trifecta of like three types of industry within one company that meant that it was very male dominated. And then Rafa, where I work today, also a cycling brand, but it's an apparel business. So we have pattern makers, we have garment technologists, we have product developers and designers. And so traditionally those industries have maybe been more female leaning. And it's a brand led company. So from the start, it's been the guy that set it up was a brand consultant, and it's always been a brand and marketing led company. So that isn't neither here nor there in terms of gender, but in other organizations that I've worked in outside of the cycling industry, marketing teams have tended to be more gender balanced or potentially even more female than they are male. So it's quite a different picture in terms of the makeup of the business. But before I joined Rafa, I didn't expect that to be the case. This is the way that the brand used to market itself. So the positioning was glory through suffering. So it's about this reward that you get through putting in the effort on the bike. And if anyone here rides a bike, it's hard work. Like that's what it feels like to go up a climb. But it was marketed in this way that was pretty alpha, pretty aggressive. And I'll share with you as well, one of our company values is suffer. So you can't really get more aggressive than that. Wear it like a badge of honor, you know. It's quite funny when we're doing late nights, we're like, suffer, you know. But really, the intention behind that, it sounds aggressive, but the intention behind it is like, put in the hard work and go the extra mile and you will get the reward at the end of it. So I think it's actually a very powerful but polarizing value to have. But this was the way they marketed themselves. And if you went back 10 years in time, the organisation was very different. The customer base was very different. So it was very male, very white, very affluent. But they've been on this transformation journey, and the customer base still leans that way, but it's much more diverse. If you go into the Manchester Clubhouse or the London Clubhouse, it's a very diverse customer base and miles away from where they used to be. So what is it that's changed the way that that brand shows up in the market and the way that the organization is made up and the way that they focus on diversity and inclusion initiatives? I think it's important to say that both of these businesses have gone through a change transformation. As I said, I'm really proud of some of the work that we did at that first organization in driving change, but they were on a very different trajectory and certainly a different momentum. So both businesses, I think, were triggered by, if we go back kind of 4 years in time and the Black Lives Matter movement, I think there was this widespread awakening in society around the scale of the inequity within society, and particularly lots of businesses kind of woke up to this fact and realized they needed to do better. And of course, race was first and foremost like the most important factor that was focused on at that time, but it was a catalyst for this wider societal change of and businesses focusing on diversity and inclusion initiatives to try and be better and do better. So both kind of triggered that change, but Rafa went on a totally different trajectory and moved at a faster pace than the previous business did. And I think there's really three factors that have meant that they've been able to transform their organization. So the first is all around ambition. So back at that moment in time, they set very ambitious goals around diversity and inclusion. So they wanted the makeup of the business to be 50% female. I think at the time it was about 20. It's now 40%. So getting there, not quite there, but pretty good progress in like a 4-year period. At the top level of the business, it's still very unequal. So I'm one of 11 on the leadership team, and three of us are women. So myself, the CFO, and the COO. So two like really pivotal roles within the business, which is great to have women in those really important roles on the leadership team. But it still is very unequal, whereas the broader part of the business is kind of 40-60. And it wasn't just the ambition for the makeup of the business. It was also how the brand showed up and what we invested into. So we invest in lots of athlete and team sponsorships. So from World Tour level, the riders of the Tour de France. So Alison Jackson here rides for EF, which is one of the teams that we sponsor. She's amazing. If you're into cycling, look her up. She does incredible dances at the end of when she wins a race. It's just like a ray of sunshine. Love her. Anyway, I digress. But 50% of our athlete funding then went to non-male, non-white and LGBTQ plus athletes. So making a real shift there in terms of our funding and investment. And that happened pretty much within a year period, and we've achieved that goal for the last 2 years. And similarly, that also came through to our marketing representation. So any models, campaigns or storytelling that we do feature 50% non-white, non-male, LGBTQ plus athletes and cyclists. So really ambitious goals, if you think of like going back to that glory through suffering picture, quite a big transition. The second piece is all around support. So these initiatives are supported across the entire organization. So from the CEO and the board, and there's accountability through the entire business for driving this change. It's not just left to like a few minority people within the business. And a couple of initiatives that we've implemented over the last couple of years. So one being a leadership development program that is for female talent across the business. So 15 women across the business were identified as future leaders, and they have gone on a year course, which is coaching, mentoring, a training program around kind of leadership skills, and also working on cross-functional projects across the business to help them develop the skills and the visibility within the business to help change that gender parity at the top level in the business, so developing that future leader program. The second piece is around parental leave. So I have to give an acknowledgement to the first business here that they were actually market leading within the industry with their parental leave policy, which got implemented just as I was leaving that business. So that was a piece of work. I won't take credit for it, but I worked on that with a group of women within the business, and we benchmarked across the industry. And I mean, the cycling industry was shocking for parental leave. Like, loads of businesses didn't even have a policy, let alone it be statutory. It's just like, oh, we just haven't even thought about that. Obviously, it's not important to us. So that was quite reflective of what the picture was, but we built a business case that said, look, if you want to change the shape of your business and you want to attract more female talent and you want to retain more female talent, this is a very easy thing. Yes, it's a financial commitment, but it's a very easy thing that you could put in place that will help you change the makeup of your workforce and show that you are an inclusive employer who wants to support all staff, but especially women, build their career with this business. So the first business did do that, and Rafa have just implemented a similar policy. So they now have 6 months full pay for the primary caregiver and 6 weeks full pay for the secondary caregiver. So an amazing package, and I think something that we should be really, really proud of. But that support is a big financial commitment for the business. But I think it signals, you know, we want to be an inclusive employer. So that's two initiatives from a support perspective. But those two are meaningless if you don't have the ongoing commitment. Like, this change doesn't happen overnight. You have to be committed to it over a number of years. And a few initiatives that we've had in place for many, many years. So one being an event that's run every year called the Women's 100. So it's a 100-kilometer challenge that's held in September every year. And it's for women to take on that challenge, whether it's the first time that they've done it or for them, that's kind of a walk in the park. But this year we had, or last year, sorry, in September, we had over 100,000 women take part in that globally on that day. And that is just, it's so unique and it's so rare. And being able to ride out with hundreds of women around you, having ridden my bike for more than 10 years and worked in this industry for a long time, that just doesn't happen. And it's a really like magical event that has this ripple effect across the community and has been responsible for bringing a huge wave of new women into the sport and set them on their cycling journey. So that's something we're really proud of, and that's in its 11th year now. So that's a hero brand activation in the calendar every year. The second piece is our product range. So this, as I said, the cycling industry is very male, and traditionally the product range was very male leaning. So way more SKUs were dedicated to men's apparel than they were for women's, and that still is a little bit imbalanced, but we have the broadest range of offering from an apparel perspective versus any of our competitors. So from entry level and some really inclusive styles, and we'll be launching some more inclusive styles this year actually, which very proud and excited about that upcoming campaign. But up to kind of the pinnacle pro team, so the kit that they wear within the World Tour. So kind of all the way up through providing that broad range of products. And again, that's a big financial commitment for the business, but it signals we want to bring more women into the sport and we want to change the face of the sport and make it more inclusive. And then the third piece is, so I'm a part of an industry-wide network called Uplift, and that is about supporting women working in the industry. It's a mentoring scheme, so I'm one of the founding mentors on that scheme. And that is all about leadership development and trying to nurture female talent within the industry and setting them up, mentees and mentors across the industry. But last week we held this event at the Rafa office in London. We had 100 women. So it was the biggest meetup that we'd ever had for women working in the industry. So really proud that we were able to host that at Rafa. But it was a half day event. So giving up the space and then allowing all of the women and men working within the business to attend this for a half day kind of shows that commitment over time. So yeah, I think those are the three major factors that have set Rafa apart versus the rest of the industry, and hopefully kind of showcases to the rest of the industry what is possible and how they can go on that journey. So just back to the point about what can we learn from cycling about driving change, transformation and cultural change within a business. Well, if you're going on a long bike ride, there's a number of different ingredients or factors that you have to have in place to be successful. And I think there's parallels that we can draw from that if you're looking to drive change transformation within a business or within a wider industry. So the first is you need to know where you're going. You've got to have your end destination. So it might be the top of this mountain, or it might be the end of the Tour de France route and you're looking to do that 3-week epic journey. But you've got to have your end destination and know where you're going. So that's your goal, that's your vision, your ambition for driving that change within the business. You've also got to map your route. So if anyone uses Strava here, you can map where you're going and then you can follow your route along the journey. But in a business context, like, you've got to have your action plan in place. So yeah, you might think you're going over here, but what are the steps that you're going to take to get there? The third piece is having a peloton and the support network around you. Like, yeah, you can go on a bike ride by yourself, but it will take you longer and it will be a lot harder and it won't be as much fun. So if you've got your peloton, you're able to take turns on the front, putting in the hard work, and then you can rest afterwards. And hopefully you've got this guy helping you up the mountain. So this is about the work in an organization. Like, often this type of diversity and inclusion work falls to the minority groups to do. And that can be very exhausting for people. So you've got to have that commitment across the business, and you need to have the support networks in place to be able to share the workload and make sure that you're each taking a turn on the front. And you've got to have pit stops. Riding a bike is like, I always joke that riding a bike is more of an eating challenge than it is an endurance challenge. Like, you have to fuel. So whether you want to stop for fish and chips or if you want to have an energy gel, I'm not a fan of energy gels, but you've got to keep your energy up because this work is pretty exhausting and usually it's extracurricular to what your actual job is. So you've got to take that time out. You've got to fill up your cup. You've got to make sure that you are re-energizing yourself if you're trying to drive this type of change transformation in a business. And you've got to be prepared for, like, the unexpected to happen. So you need to scenario plan, whether that's your puncture repair kit or knowing what you're going to do if you, I mean, very rare to come up against two bulls fighting in the street, but you've got to have the agility to be able to overcome those challenges. So having a scenario plan and knowing what you're going to do to course correct to overcome those challenges is really important. Measurement. Any cyclist in the room will know that it's all about the data. So you have to measure. There's no point having your goal or your destination if you're not going to measure your pacing, your heart rate, your speed. You've got to have that constant check-in of, are we going where we said we were going to go, and are we going at the pace we said we were going to go? So you've got to measure and check in over time and make sure that you've got that constant communication to see if you're on the right path. And finally, this is very much last but not least, because I think this is probably one of the most important factors, but you've got to have the grit and determination to go the distance. This is not easy work. It's pretty, like, as I said in the previous business, it was like pushing water uphill. So you're going over challenging terrain. You might have to carry your bike over the mountain, and you're definitely going to experience turbulent weather. So yeah, there's going to be mud, there's going to be grit, there's going to be rain, there's going to be headwinds. It's not easy, but you have to have that resilience and that determination to kind of drive this change. So just thinking back to the experience where I had to tap out and was totally exhausted, what did the first business have in place, or what were they missing that meant that I couldn't go the course? Well, they definitely had the vision and the destination. They knew where they wanted to get to, and they even had their route mapped, and they had some action plans in place. But they certainly didn't have the peloton. there was a small group of people trying to drive this change in the organisation. It was extracurricular for them, and they were the minority groups trying to change it. So if you don't have that peloton and shared work across the business, it's never going to work. And I certainly didn't stop for my fish and chips. I was trying to go full gas, 100 miles an hour, and didn't take the time to fill up my cup and refuel myself. So I just totally ran out of steam. Whereas where I work today at Rafa, like, it's a full commitment by the organisation. They definitely have the vision. They've got the measurement in place. They've got the action plan. There's support across the business. So they're not perfect. They're still on a journey, but they've got all of these right ingredients in place to allow that change transformation to happen. So just in summary, change transformation and driving change within a business is not easy work, but it's much like a bike ride. So you'll have your grueling uphill climbs like this. You'll have your flying descents. It will be a roller coaster ride. But if you can stay the course and you can really have the support network around you, then when you get to the top of the mountain, the view will be so very worth it.